My name is Sanjo Geiken. I'm a researcher in science and technology studies at the University of Bielefeld, basically basically concerned with philosophy of technology and philosophy of science. And one of my focuses is actually to try and develop some anarchical theory of technology. And from within this focus, I found it quite interesting to look at this connection of free software and anarchism, which has been quoted frequently in the press over the past years. So I'm going to talk a little on this, whether it computes or not. The structure of the talk is going to be the following. First of all, I'm going to try and develop the connotation, what actually led to the connotation between free software and anarchism. Second, I'm going to sketch briefly what the theory of anarchical technology will be about. Third will be then, given this outlines of an anarchical theory of technology, the case of free software as a case study within this theory. And then my outcome and main thesis, so to speak, will be that free software is not very anarchical at all, in fact not very political at all. That's my opinion, and we can debate about that. But still, I believe that a certain demonstrative value can be obtained. That will be the fourth part of this talk. And then in the end, so to speak, I'll try to sketch just a few ideas for anarchical computing from within the anarchist theory of technology. So part one, the connotation, free software and anarchism. The connotation actually stems from the, if you compare certain patterns of software development. The first pattern is the industrialized pattern of software development, which is very rigid, very framed, very hierarchical because it's very expensive, of course, very strict, strictly ordered. And of course, the main feature which we come to terms with when we talk about free software is that it's largely secret. Because of course it costs a lot of money, and it's so to speak the capital of the companies to have their methods secret and some certain patterns of their design. So these are some central characteristics of the industrialized development. And if you now compare free software development, then it's basically guided by other principles. It's more or less produced by users directly. There is very little hierarchical ordering, and I mean official hierarchical ordering. Decisions are largely reached by consensus of the certain community which is concerned with it, and in a way you could say it's cheap. Of course, this is a strange thing to say about free software, but it's actually the development is distributed among a lot of developers who are voluntarily working on these projects, so it's in comparison not as expensive as huge companies who are developing their software with in very small groups and have to pay them for this. And of course, the most significant characteristic in comparison with the industrialized design pattern is that its design is largely open. The source code is accessible, and everybody is invited to look at it and to develop it further. And by this, also the success of free software during the last years has been guaranteed. So, if we have this comparison, we can easily find some anarchical elements in it, in free software development, from this now colloquial meaning of anarchism. First of all, we don't have any leadership or hierarchies in such an explicit sense in which we find them in actual companies. Second, the decision making is largely consensus based, although there are derivative models as well. Third, the designer, everybody who's actually designing it has individual design options, so everybody who's able to participate actually can change the design or bring something into it and work with it. And of course, most significantly, it's open for participation for everybody who wants to, more or less open. And you can also, of course, derive some negative notions from the colloquial meaning of anarchism, which is basically connected to burning cars and things like this, which has been has also been a part of the FUD initiative, the Fear, Uncertainty, Doubt initiative, which was launched by the marketing squad of Microsoft. And they also use the term anarchism to describe free software, to connote it to orderlessness, to bring in some notions that it has no stability and that, of course, it doesn't have any quality and such. Then another thing, so these are basically the features and which allow generally the connection and which have invited in the history of these of the free software development the terms anarchism and anarchical development. And what then happened during the last years was a certain politicization of the whole process of the whole free software development. And this came to pass because the openness basically implied new models for business, new models for design, new models for development, and connected it to communities of designers. And so there were whole new concepts on new models developing for concepts of property and concepts of design and all these things. And these were very soon taken to be very fundamental challenges towards general social structures in late high capitalism. And as such, these were very easily extended to some general notion of social reform, which might be going on, some general sense of revolution, which might actually happen through open software, free software. And we see this currently developing, that there are quite a few OpenX initiatives opening up in a number of aspects. Also, more directly, political projects like Equinox and some other institutions who open up upon this idea. So, this whole first rather colloquial meaning of anarchism now got some political impact. So was politically laden with the that there was something valuable politically in this. And what we now see is that actually quite a few developers or front figures of this field actually use this the term anarchy to describe some certain set of values and certain political characteristics to actually describe free software. Like Stallman said, it's a step towards the post-scarcity world, and post-scarcity world is a term which was invented basically by Murray Bookchin. Well, I don't know if he invented it, but at least he's written a very decisive article on it, and he's a very good anarchist. And that was the cornerstone of one of his anarchist theories. So Stallman referred to that. Milsom said counterfeits anarchical methods. Edward Morgan says has anarchist benefits. And this Indian guy says it's an anarchist mode of communication. I don't know what the name is. So the connotation is there, and it seems to imply that there's some sort of political, anarchical thing going on with free software. But if you're actually an anarchist, then you can easily find some preliminary criticism of the connotation, namely that the whole concept of free software was not a very genuine anarchical program in the first place. The connotation rather developed after the free software development. So was really attached later. And then another point is that you do not find any explicit references to anarchical theories who try to map the certain features about open software, free software, which are really anarchical. So it's rather really colloquial. And so the other points follow from that we have to assume, due to this lack of references, that the uses of the term anarchical in this context have been rather metaphorical and rather stemmed from the colloquial understanding of anarchism, and so the connection has been rather superficial. And as such, the whole question which is guiding my talk is quite legitimate to actually ask if free software really is anarchical. And now, to judge this, we will first have to develop a brief sketch of what the anarchist theory of technology would be about. And this is what we're going to do now. So the first question, which we of course have to ask ourselves, is how can technology be political after all? I mean, in a way you could say, okay, political politics and technology actually seems to be rather neutral. It can lend itself to purposes, of course, but it can also lend itself to good purposes or to bad purposes. And so in a way it appears to be neutral, but that really is something which has been rejected by philosophers of technology for the past 30 years at least, the new left with 1968 with Herbert Marcuse made a turning point in this whole discussion of neutralness of technology. And we can now discern some rather clear factors in which technology has to be rated as to be political. One, of course, is known ever since Marx, that technology, of course, is part of the productive force, and as such part of the productive force of the productive power of the people, and as such it also substantially is a part of how a certain society has to be designed, as certain means to get food and to get infrastructure and to get energy and so on. Then another point is that technology actually often medializes power structures. What we mean by this is a philosophical term, the medialization of power structures. And what we mean by it is that certain governments or people who hold power are trying to introduce these powers or to actually manifest these powers in certain technologies, which are then being made universal, so everybody has to use them, and then you have manifested these power structures. And what follows is sort of an inherent necessity to follow these power structures because you have to use the technology. One very clear example, of course, is surveillance or biometrical passports, to give a very current example. So that is an issue as well. Another, of course, is that some technological structures also demand certain social structures to operate. For example, a big grid of subway and trains needs a very competent organizing team and so on. So it needs hierarchies, it needs certain levels of decision making and so on. So the whole technology of the train technology, so to speak, demands a certain social order in which it can function. And another point, of course, is that technology can also be a conceptual or ideological paradigm, which is this is rather an abstract point which is being debated a lot in philosophy, and how far we think actually technologically, and in how far, of course, we also think of our fellow humans as being technological items or something in some senses. For example, bureaucracies do so quite often. For them, the people who are coming into the bureaucracy are just small parts of machines and so on. So technology actually is quite political in many aspects. And once we know that, we can ask ourselves, well, if technology has such a political impact and is so little neutral, actually, then we should really ask ourselves how we can construct technology in a political awareness, starting from our political ideas. And that would be sort of the picture we would have if we would construct technologies politically aware. We would have some political ideas and then develop the supportive technologies for these political ideas and discard the destructive technologies, which are, so to say, in the way of our political ideas. And so this would be the general pattern to derive or to come to a political theory of technology. And now to come to the political theory of anarchist technology, we have to look at some demands anarchism would make, and this would be a rather brief and intuitional approach to anarchism. You could say the primary goal of anarchism is liberty, freedom, and individual liberty, which is only limited by the liberty of others in a very direct way, not this very medialized way in which it is mostly distributed by democracy. And from this primary goal, some very simple demands can be derived. The first set of demands would be a set of negative demands from also termed negative freedom by Isaiah Berlin. And that would entail the abolition of authoritarianism and hierarchies of all sorts, be they implicit or explicit, would entail the abolition of any sorts of inequalities. And as a result of that, of course, of some prevailing systems or thought patterns we have in our current society, such as capitalism, competition, sexism, and all these things. And these are called negative demands, negative freedom, because they aim at abolishing something and destructing something. Apart from that, we can also clear out some positive demands. The one, of course, is self-determination. Everybody should be able to really say what he wants to do in his life for himself. Then another demand, which is not taken to be quite natural from these demands, is a certain decentralization. This is to say that the anarchist picture of society generally assumes that we have to decentralize these huge cities and huge compounds of humans, because if you have cities which entail like a couple of millions of people, you have to have certain social orderings, and you have to have hierarchies, and you have to have police and everything. And so really these very centralized structures which we have now really sort of demand deterministically ordering and all these things. And so it's generally assumed that we should decentralize these structures into communities, or break up these structures into communities which are a little smaller, communities and free association. And these can be ranging from small communes, people have different ideas on how that can be pursued, up to communities of some 2,000-3,000 members. Yes, and within these communities, of course, you have to have some sort of decision-making process as well, for example, for processes which concern the community. And these have to be, these decision-making processes have to be based on some sort of free agreement, so nobody is ruled over. And there, of course, we have a couple of different models within anarchist theories how these goals can be, or how these positive demands can actually be implemented, and in which scale and so on. But basically this is this, and free agreement, for instance, goes with direct democracy would be one way, or consensus where really everybody has to agree would be another way. So now we have some demands from anarchism. Now we can we have this picture that we need, if we can, we can politically construct technologies from political ideas, and we have this picture what the basic demands of anarchism would be like. Now we can ask ourselves this question: what is an anarchical theory? And that, of course, now would simply be a technology which supports the positive anarchical demands about trying to abolish the menaces which are being stated in the negative demands. And from this, it's easy to draw some minimal demands as design for technologies which would enable anarchical communities actually to develop. One, of course, would be that we should generally not allow technologies which medialize power principles, such as biometrical passports, should not be constructed, or should not be a topic within anarchist technology. Then, of course, size and proportion is a substantial issue. Because if you have these decentralized communities in mind, then you have to have machines which actually work for these small communities. I'll be giving an example in a second. Machines have to be fitted to local demands and to only a few workers who work them, and not like tens of thousands. Also, some demands concern complexity and needed skill. They have to be fitted to little organizations, so they can actually be handled by small communities. They have to be fitted to little training, because we cannot expect everybody to be a specialist in a very highly advanced stage or something. And they have to be very robust and sturdy technologies, so they do not need much maintenance. And another point, of course, is resources has to be fitted to local resources as well, with little energy and infrastructure, so that these decentralized communities can actually live on their own without being very dependent from global structures or international structures or anything. Some maximal demands have been outlined as well, basically by Murray Bookchin, who has written a very good article on anarchist technology. And one maximal demand is full automation and full mechanization of any sort of production, such that humans are really totally free to decide whatever they want to do in their life, to be creative or do programming or whatever they want to do. And there's a nice metaphor for this actually in a very nice science fiction story from German science fiction writer Herbert Franke, who's unfortunately not very much translated into English. And he is like one science fiction story where people on Earth just live and do whatever they want to, and they only do sports and art and everything. And then there are these big holes in the floor everywhere. And out of these holes comes everything they need, like houses and cars and food and everything. And so that would be the ideal model of technology which an anarchist would sort of dream of, to really liberate people from this necessity of work. Another maximal demand, of course, would be that we would have a fully sustainable local production, would use renewable energies, would not pollute our immediate surrounding and everything, so we can really live in peace and don't need to wage wars, for instance, due to our lack of oil or anything. And then another demand, which is quite interesting, is the emergence of positive, so-called positive technologies, which has been outlined by Bookchin and even Illich as well. And this is some sort of concept of a technology which is not only there to produce things, but which also enables people to be more creative and to develop really their human potentials in creative way. But as I say, this theory has not been outlined very good. So probably computers could be taken to be positive technologies in a way, insofar as they can be used by people to develop themselves. Yes, and I also have some examples on what is being meant by this. A negative example, for example, would be a large steel factory compound, as we have found them within this Stalinist era of industrialization. They built it like very huge centralized structures, whole cities who were only concerned with the production of steel. And there were really thousands, tens of thousands of workers there. And this, of course, needed a hierarchical ordering, needed decision makers, specialists, everything. And the whole process was becoming very inaccessible for the people who were actually had to work there. And then it also only produced more or less one product, the barons of steel. It needed a very sophisticated access to resources, needed a lot of energy, which again produced through the centralization and other places, infrastructure, and of course a big market. A positive example, on the other hand, for an anarchical technology would be a sun furnace to actually melt iron into steel, which is just being worked by the sun, can be handled by about 50 people, and you don't need any special skills to operate it. You can produce a variety of products from it, and it uses very little resources, can be switched on just for a day of production and then switched off. Also, as an energy, of course, it only uses sun energy and so on, and really works for local demand. So this would be a technology which would really enable a localized community to live independent of anything else and anyone else and really develop in freedom. So these are this is the brief sketch of the anarchist theory of technology, or some outlines just to give a broad idea of what that could be. And if we now have this in mind, keep this in mind, and now look at free software, we can look at it in two ways. The first way is to look at it as a technology and as such. And as a technology, we have to see that free software is basically a component of computers. And so we have to look at computers as well. And computer production now is very demanding, at least in its current stage. It needs a very rigid division of labor. It has a lot of hierarchies, needs global resource infrastructures, because really some resources are very complex to get. It consumes high amounts of energies, and it really needs big markets in the current ordering, at least, to pay off. So these are all things which we would, from a point of production, which we would generally rather reject if we have the development of free communities in mind. Also, the use of computers is not really accessible to everyone who wants one. You know, you need money, first of all, to buy it, and quite a few people on Earth don't have computers because they don't have the money. Then you need energy, of course, and you need a certain infrastructure like internet. And what you also need is some specialists for maintenance, for instance. So this also has some demands on some sort of structure which you have to actually come to a computer. And some other characteristics of computers are that they are also predetermined in their possible uses, and that they very often medialize power structures, or at least they are very supportive in medializing power structures. Just had this other speech yesterday, the Lost War, could actually be a result because computers lend themselves so very easily to medialize power, And of course, the computer as such is also proliferating social and ideological paradigms regarding hierarchy and authority, because it is being maintained by specialists and as such not very accessible. It produces a hierarchy generally between lay people and specialists and so on, and implicitly purports the structures. So that would be free software as a technology. Another way to look at it would of course be, and this is of course the way the connection is meant, the connotation is meant, intended to be, to look at free software as a technological design method. And here we can see that it is, of course, partly anarchical, because the decision-making is consensus-based. It is largely unguided, except probably for some inherent necessities, some internal logic of design in general. It's individually variable, open, non-profit, and we have seen this already. But if we look into it more closely, we have to see that the freedom actually is quite enframed, namely by rules in the first place. Some there, of course, some implicit do's and don'ts. And then we have all this copyleft stuff like the GPL and Creative Commons. And that, of course, generally quite opposes the whole idea of anarchism. The introduction of rules is, I think it was Foucault who said that it's a very stupid human idea that you think that you have to ensure freedom by rules and order, because freedom is just the absence of rules and order. So it's not a good idea in general to introduce rules to ensure freedom, because it's just not the way freedom is. And then you have quite often, of course, implicit, more or less implicit, explicit hierarchical structures, as in the case with Linux, for example. Then it also requires specialist knowledge, so the whole thing is actually quite esoteric, can only be pursued by people who are really into these sorts of things, programmers, so to speak. So it's really not open to everyone, but only to people who have a very sophisticated education already. Then another point is that it also often uses capitalist measurements to value itself. It often refers to how profitable it is or how productive it is to actually measure its value. And one thing we cannot forget in the whole design, if we look at it as a design method, is that it is still also a technology which presupposes computers as a technology, which again bring in all these other things which are not very liked by an anarchist theory of technology. So my judgment somehow is that free software is not a very genuine anarchical technology. As a technology, as I said, it happens only within computers which need extensive capitalistic production methods. They are still in a way a luxury commodity, more or less, although of course people are working to make them more accessible to everyone. And they very often and very easily medialize power structures. And as a design method, it is enframed by rules, by implicit hierarchies, and only accessible by specialists. So from my point of view, free software is not a very good anarchical technology at all. So the connotation is not very valid at all, or at least this political connotation. But still, I believe that even if we set these things aside and these political hopes and connections aside, still a certain demonstrative value can be obtained by it, namely a value within a certain argument which is being put forward by capitalists and authoritarianists, because they argue that effective production and development really needs hierarchical structures, it needs competition, and it needs money to really make people work and develop and design. So creativity basically needs money. It's the whole argument which is also being brought forward against these free software, copyleft, and other things as well, that the financial stimulus is really not there and people really start to be lazy and don't do anything anymore. And as far as that is concerned, this of course also is an argument which is being brought forth against anarchist theories as well. So quite a few people actually say that anarchism would never work because people would only be lazy. If they could choose whatever they want to do, they would certainly not produce or certainly not develop things, and development sort of needs competition and all these things to happen. But here actually we can say that free software has demonstrated quite the opposite, namely that quality and productivity do not need all these capitalistic measures, but are actually quite obtained quite well also in the absence of these structures. So from this point of view, we can take free software to be a case study against this alleged connection of production and development and profit and authority. So it sort of supports the claim that a society which would not be based on capitalistic and hierarchical ordering would still be productive, and probably even more so if you look at the rate in which free software development actually takes place in comparison to the industrial developmental pattern. So free software actually is politically valuable, but just as a case study for this specific kind of argument, but I wouldn't take it to be political in itself, and I wouldn't take the whole discussion about it to be so very revolutionary after all, because it really happens just in a very tiny space somewhere. So, this is my judgment of free software, basically, and now what I wanted to add were some additional ideas for anarchical computing, which can be obtained from sort of as a lesson from these from this judgment and from within this theory of anarchist technology. One idea, of course, would be to further liberate free software by abandoning rules and implicit hierarchies and all these things. So to throw away Creative Commons, throw away GPL and all that stuff, and throw away all these implicit hierarchies, who and do's and don'ts, and just do things, you know. And even if they're illegal, then still just do them, you know. I mean, who's going to stop you? Another point would be to make programs and programming a lot easier, so really everyone can participate, and not only programmers and specialists, you know, like unexpertise these things, to really make them accessible to people. Because you cannot sensibly speak that really everyone can access these and everyone can participate in this process if you really have to have a very sophisticated education. So that would be a point. Another point would be to actually write free machine software which would work on machines which are specific production machines which can be used by smaller communities and to free them from company dependence. This would also be a program, for instance, for third world countries who often obtain these sorts of technologies, mostly from Siemens, but then these technologies have such sophisticated software that they really have a lifelong dependence on these companies to maintain the software and everything. So this would really be some very concrete thing where some free software would have entirely different value in comparison to our free entertainment software, more or less. Then another point, of course, which has been sketched also a number of times, I believe, already, is to actually design free hardware. Of course, this does not mean to be free hardware of, in a sense of gratis, but in this Stallman sense, like free as in free speech and not in free beer, that it has to be patent-free, but that really technological designers so should take time and design things, design technology, and give them out patent-free and give the designs out so really people and smaller communities can build these technologies. And these, of course, could then embody anarchical principles and promote actually the construction of anarchic communities and independence of the bigger companies. So that would be also a point where one could be producing the much rather anarchical technology. And then the last point, which I find particularly interesting, is to design sabotage software and devices which enable people to sabotage surrounding technologies, which often medialize power structures, that which they do not approve of. This would be some sort of enable people to hack, you know, very generally everyone. And this is a concept which I'm trying to work on a little in my current research to and in how far sabotage and actually the distribution of sabotage software and sabotage devices could be some sort of action to liberate people from this technological determinism. Because if you would put up like design plans, how to design sabotage devices, and if you would put up sabotage software to sabotage voting computers or to sabotage biometrical passports and everything, you would enable the people to get rid of these inherent necessities of the machines that surround them, because they could simply switch them off again. And that would, of course, be a great help for these to just try and get out of these inherent necessities and gain control of them again, especially when they're being introduced in political and social contexts. And this is, of course, something which is happening right now in all this anti-terrorism stuff. So that would allow people to demedialize power structures around them as in so far as they're incorporated into technologies. And this would give people more choices towards technological determinism in general. And I also believe that this could be a very good action in a way if one would do it officially and officially give out sabotage devices and sabotage ideas, because then that has a very strong and substantial demonstrative value and sort of puts us into the defense, because then the judicial thing game, of course, would be that others would have to attack this idea of sabotaging power structure technologies, and so the standpoint would be much better for discussion, and so this has some value as social protest as well. Yes. Yeah, and these were just some ideas on the end of my talk of something which I'm thinking of currently, and this is it. Thank you. Now I'm open for questions. So any questions?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for the very interesting talk. At the beginning, you were saying that free software is mainly developed by hobbyists and people who do that in their free time. While I believe that was true up to 5 years ago, I think you should know that currently most free software is developed by people who get paid for it. I mean, IBM and Sun Microsystem, just to quote a few names, and my employer, actually pay people to develop free software, and I think most of the free software now is developed by those companies. So of course that means that free software is even less anarchical today, I believe.
Oh yes, thank you, that's a good combination. Okay.
I just wanted to say the thing you called the so-called rule of this copyleft GPL stuff, it's not my opinion. I think a different way. I think that GPL is it's a quite good weapon against the thing that you have been swallowed. You've been swallowed by companies. You're swallowed by capitalism. Because the open source movement, it's a quite little one when you compare it against global players. So you need protection, and this is a kind of weapon. So it's more a weapon than a rule.
Well, my point of view on this thing is that it really, you cannot use certain weapons without becoming your own enemy. This is like, as soon as you start playing this license game and playing the legal game and everything, you are again affirming the general structures and the basic structures which made you a captive in the first place. So really, from an anarchist and rather revolutionary point of view, you would say that this is just a totally wrong way to do it, because this is a corruptive system which has been invented to corrupt all these things, and which again now in turn turns on you. And to derive, so to say, a counter-revolution, a counter-system to this license stuff by introducing new licenses, it's just rubbish from my point of view. I'm really not...
Hi, I would like to expand on this point of criticism. You said earlier that destroying sexism and racism and capitalism was a strong point of anarchism. And I agree with that. And the rules that GPL sets up is certain rules to protect our individual freedom, so that no one could take that away from you, you, for example. As our rules against racism in society protects all the weak people who don't have as strong voice as the strong people from the strong people. So it rules are a necessity in an anarchist society, I would say.
Oh, I wouldn't say so, because, I mean, really, anarchism, I mean, of course it depends on the point of view which you have about anarchism a little, but generally to be an anarchist in the first place means that you have to believe that humans are basically good creatures, you know. I mean, the basic belief which you have to have is that humans do not kill each other as soon as you abandon rules. And that's the whole point about anarchism, to abandon rules, you know, to say that people can do whatever they want to, and we don't have to control them all the time and give them all these rules because they don't need them. You know, if they have their bare necessities and everything is being cared of, like food and shelter and all these things, then they would basically not go at each other's throats. You know, so rules are generally have always been a tool of oppression. From an anarchist point of view, it's really anarchism is to me really is the absence of rules.
Sorry, I have to say one more sentence. I don't think so, because for me it sounds like turning away from reality when I believe in this, when I believe every human is a good person, because I think that's not the question if one person is good or not. If a human is loveful or not, the question is how is the system working, and it's not good, and yeah, there are many ways to face it and to go to take another way, and one of the things is make rules to banish all the other rules. Human rights are not bad because they are rules. I don't think so.
Well, well, then you're a Democrat. I don't know. I mean, democracy is a different thing than I don't believe in democracy because it apparently doesn't work very well. So, or it only works for a certain minority of people who profit from it. But so, I wouldn't say so. I mean, anarchism is really the absence of rules. Well, it's not the total absence of rules, but it's generally the absence of the concept of the relevance of rules. So, anyone else?
I'd like to bring in another point. I think you were one thing totally missing in your analysis of free software, and that's the economic point. Free software, the main thing, in my opinion, is that it's not, it doesn't have something like a worth. It's the software itself, you can just take it and it doesn't cost money. And that's also the reason why I think the GPL is a very clever thing, because it just doesn't matter if the developer is paid by IBM or whoever, or if he's a hobbyist, because the software itself is free in a sense that everyone can use it and that it's taken out of economy because it doesn't have a worth. And I think we don't need the GPL at all, but we need it as long as we have a capitalist system where because of this impact to protect free software, as long as there are companies out there who could take it else.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a point, but you have to see that all these things that that we have seen these attitudes in other parts of history as well. And that this is sort of a compromising attitude, and this I don't want to draw such a very big connection, but for instance, this the dictatorship of the masses in Soviet communism has never ended, and that was meant to be a compromise as well. And I don't believe that compromises work, because they still try to try to use the same structures and try to hold up the same principles that actually your opponent is using to oppress you. And because he has the majority on these things and has sort of the power over these things, he will always be able to rule you or to overrule you as well.
I can't follow you by saying I'm anarchist and you are a Democrat. From my point of view, I know no anarchist who's not a Democrat, and I know no anarchist who doesn't accept human rights. But the other point is that, in my opinion, the GPL has formed a small room where we can perform such a study of how we can work better. And sure, it's a small room, and maybe we're corrupted by this, but in my opinion, this small room is really big. Think what we have all reached. And in my opinion, it's the GPL.
Well, I think you can also reach this just in the very absence of GPL. Why do you need GPL? You know, I mean, just do these things.
Well, I have an answer to that. We could look at the BSD code, which I presume you prefer. And the TCP stack of the BSD code that Microsoft took and incorporated in their software, Windows, and therefore became a lot better and more selling.
Yeah, still.
But if Windows got better, isn't that a good thing for humanity? No, frankly.
It's better if Windows is a good thing. If Windows like supports capitalist structures that oppresses people, it's a bad thing. And I'm not really going to go into that right now.
Windows is a good thing if you take it. Windows is a bad thing if you buy it.
Here goes the mic.
Thank you. I would say it's a bit misconcepted to stage this as a question of compromises as being not compromising. I think we are dealing with an idea of a pure subject, which is, I think, is false. So, for instance, when seeing if free software is anarchistic or communist or not, we have always to point out that we live in a post-fordist capitalism, which is making use of free labor, and so on and so on. And you make those points, which are important. But they doesn't rule out that at the same time there is another potential, always active, where people desire to break away from wage labor. And these two exist at the same time. So, and the same with, so that's my point, to be quick.
I don't really know what to say to this. I'm a little bit tired as well already. Sorry. So anyone else?
I think free software is not the answer for an anarchist system, because at first you must ask for the system, what we have. You must know who owns this building here, for example. This is not our building. It's a building of the owner of the BCC. And we must take this building that we can say it's us. Then we are anarchists. And I think free software is just a playing field for rich or middle class and upper class students, and they are saying we are so anarchistic when we are now programming in our universities. And I think this is not the main question of changing of this system. We must first destroy this system, then we can speak about more anarchism. And this is the most question: who's the owner of our production things and our companies?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the general thing is that it's not so much really about now finally judging free software, finally judging GPL or something. The point I just wanted to make was that the connection to call these things anarchical or anarchist is really not so very valid. And from my point of view, and really from the point of view of anarchist theory, you would really have to have different concepts and not again rules or anything. So and that was just basically the point I wanted to make.
What is your revolutionary subject?
Revolutionary subject? What do you mean?
The workers class, the students, or all the people in the world, or the
everyone
world?
For himself.
Everyone.
Yeah, you are. I am. Disappointed. Okay, anyone else? Yes. Microphone.
I'm just wondering, you said that programming means to be an expert. I disagree with these scripting languages. It's so easy. It's much more complicated to learn how to build a house. Yeah. Yeah, okay, you have to read it. I think it's even more difficult to repair a bike than to program.
Well, that's probably your point of view. I don't know anything about programming, and I don't think I will.
Yeah. I guess people are not so easily, learning how to program because they don't see the value of it. They could learn programming within a week, but they don't do it.
Yeah, but that's really a luxury commodity, isn't it? They could learn programming within a week. I don't think so. Could they? Could they learn programming within a week up to a grade that they could really participate in the development of Linux?
No, that's a bit more difficult, okay.
No, but that's the thing we're talking about, you know. Yeah. That's the thing we're talking about. Yeah. We're not talking about, like, writing a little script for something.
But that would be a start, and there's lots of things you can do with scripting meanwhile.
Yes, but I mean the vast chunk of mankind doesn't have the time or just the commodities to really work themselves into these topics so very well that they could really participate in it.
Yeah,
it's just not that accessible.
Okay, and on the other hand, you say that the hardware has to be much simpler to be accessible also, or in an anarchistical sense. And I wonder if you have any practical idea how it would look like. I mean, it's already very complicated, and nanotechnics maybe next thing, and would you want to go back to mechanical devices to make it easier?
No, we don't have to go back to mechanical devices, but we can of course enable people to. We can make things or design programs which enable us to design programs, so to speak, and make those very easy, or just go back to more easy machine structures. And as far as nanotechnologies and all this crap is concerned, I don't think we really need that, you know. I mean, that's really crap. Most of what I heard about nanotechnology is really uninteresting, stupid. There's no killer application for nanotechnology so far. I mean, you can switch the color of your car every morning, but that's about it. So I don't think we need this. We should rather try to develop some technologies which enable us to have clean water everywhere, to have sustainable energies, to have a healthy environment. And those are very basic, simple technologies which are already at hand, you know. I don't think we have to really now, oh my God, how can we make nanotechnologies available for everyone, you know. I mean, most people have other worries than nanotechnologies, so...